Hello and welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller, and together we're learning Masechet Moed Katan. We find ourselves on Daf Chaf Bet Amud Bet. That's 22b, and we're about 21 lines down, which is almost halfway down the Amud. This series of recordings is a joint project of OU Torah, the OU Department of Synagogue Services, and the Daf HaShavua Foundation. We've been discussing a braita that lists a series of differences between mourning for other relatives, son, daughter, brother, sister, and spouse, and one losing their, and someone who's in mourning for their mother and father. The mother and father is usually a more severe mourning for longer and in more serious ways than for the other deceased relatives. So we've done five of them already, just to review what those five are. For mother and father, you do delay the funeral in order to say eulogies, which you don't do for others. You are required to limit your business dealings during Shiva. You are supposed to expose your shoulder as a sign of mourning. That's three. Four is that you're not allowed to shave or take a haircut until your friends tell you that you look disheveled. Adshi yigaru bo chaverav. Fifth was that you may not enter into a Beit HaSimcha, a celebratory event like a wedding, or a Simchat Mereyut, a gathering, a merry gathering of friends for 12 months either for mother and father. So now we come to the sixth. The sixth difference is Al Kol HaMeitin Kulan, for all other deceased relatives. Korea Tafach, when you tear Kriya, when you tear your clothes, you only tear one tefach, a hand's breadth. That's how far you tear. Al aviv ve'al imo, for his mother and his father, ad she'igale et libo. He has to tear longer than a tefach tear, so that it has to go all the way down so that it would expose his chest, where his heart is. Amar Rabbi Abahu, Mikra. Rabbi Abahu derived this from a verse where David was tearing Kriya. And it says, Vayichazek David bivgadav, and David grabbed a hold of his clothes, Vayikar aim, and he tore them. And because it uses this language of Vayichazek, we say, Ein achiza, there is no grabbing, pachot mi tefach, that's less than a tefach. So the minimum shi'ur, the minimum amount for a rip, would be a tefach. So that's how far you have to rip for a regular mourner. Continuing on, Al Kol HaMeitin Kulam Afil, Al Kol HaMeitin Kulam, all the other Meitim, the deceased relatives, Afilu Lavush Asara Chalukin, Eino Korea Ela Elyon. Even if you're wearing 10 layers of clothing, the only one that you have to tear is your uppermost clothing. You have to choose one, or you take one piece of clothing to tear, and that's the one that's visible, the top one. Al aviv ve'al imo koreat kulan. But for your mother and your father, you have to tear all of the clothes that you're wearing, all of the different layers. However, there is an exception. Va'apikar suto eina me'akevet. But his apikar sut is not required to be torn. Rashi says the apikar sut is like a apikar sut on his head, either some kind of a hood, garment with a hood, or a hat. But there are other opinions. Between the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, they define it either as an outer garment, like a coat or a sweater or something that you use to go outside as something to protect against the elements, or an inner garment, like a sweaty garment, like an undershirt. And our minhag in general is not to tear either a outer coat level layer or an inner undershirt level layer, but all the other layers we do tear. Echad ha'ish ve'echad ha'isha, and this applies both to a man and to a woman. The woman also has to tear all of her layers of clothes. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, he doesn't disagree, but he says that a woman should do it in a way that protects her modesty. So ha'isha korat et ha'tachton, she should tear her garment that's hidden first, umachazirato la'chora, and then she should turn it around so that the tear is not facing forward. V'chozeret v'korat et ha'elyon, and then she can tear the upper garment, so that the upper garment is torn, but her body is being blocked from being seen by the lower garment, which is torn in a different place. And this would help also with a woman who was going to tear, so that it would be megalat liba, if it would expose her heart. That tearing would have to be enough that she would have to move her clothes around so that it was not immodest. The next distinction, which is the eighth one, says al kol hametin kulan, al kol hametin kulan, for all the other deceased relatives, ratza mavdil kame shafesh elo, ratza eno mavdil. If he wants to, he can tear at the hem, which means not only to tear the hem at the top of the clothing, but to rip it wider so that it appears like it's a tear. But for other mourners, he doesn't have to do that. He can just tear at the hem. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with this, and he says, Kol kriya she'eno mavdil kame shefa shelo eino ela kera shel tiflut. Rabbi Yehuda says, any tear that it is just on the hem, that is just a small tear, is not really considered a tear at all. It's considered a temporary or insignificant tear. So he would require you to always tear a little to tear further than that. For father and mother, you would tear even further. But just tearing the hem would not be enough. You have to be mavdil. You have to separate the clothing one from the other. How does he derive this? Amar Rabbi Abahu, my time is Rabbi Yehuda. Tichtiv, as it is written, this is the same pasuk we had about David a minute ago. Vayechazek bivgadav. I'm sorry, this is not the same pasuk. This is a different pasuk. This pasuk is from Malachim Bet, although we saw it in an earlier daf. Vayechazek bivgadav. He grabbed a hold of his clothes. Vayikareim l'shnayim kraim, and he tore them into two tears. Mimashma shenemar vayikareim. So the question that Rabbi Abahu has is it not obvious, or is it not follow, that when it says he tore them, eni yodea shehen lishnayim, that he tore them into two, why does it have to say he tore them into two? So you might say he actually had to tear them into two pieces. That might be the simplest explanation. But he gives a different one. Ella shenirin kruim kishnayim. They should appear as if they're torn into two. In other words, it shouldn't just look like it might be part of the fashion, that it has a crease in it or a cut in it that puts it into two flaps. It should be gashed in a way that it appears as if it's two separate pieces of clothing that have been separated from each other. But it doesn't have to be completely separated. It just has to look like it's two pieces of clothing. Al kol hametim kulam, on all the other deceased relatives, sholel achar shiva, after shiva you can be misholel, that is, you can do like a ladder stitch. It's just a quick stitch to hold it shut, but it looks messy and unprofessional. Ume'achel achar shloshim, but then you can stitch it much more closely and more professionally after 30 days have gone by. Al aviv al imo, but for his father and his mother, sholel achar lam, and you can't even fix it temporarily until after the 30 days. Ve'enu ma'achel olam, and you can never completely fix to make it as it was before a piece of clothing for your mother and father. This is an interesting distinction. It's the only aspect of mourning that we have that doesn't even change after 12 months. You would think after 12 months, then you could fix this garment, but according to this halacha, which is unique as far as I know, you can never fix this garment that you tore for your mother and your father. And then we make a distinction here, as opposed to above, where we said it applies to both a man and a woman. We say here, "Va'isha sholal tola altar mipnei kvoda." A woman can do a temporary fix stitch on her clothing immediately for her honor, which sounds like it even means within 7 days. But then she would either have to wait until after 30 days for other relatives to fix it more, or she would not be able to fix it at all beyond that for her mother and father. That is the limit of all of the specific distinctions that were made between other deceased relatives and one's father and mother in the Braita. There were 9 distinctions in all. However, there are a couple of additional ones, 2 additional ones that were brought by Rabbi Yochanan. So Ki'ata Ravin, when Ravin came from Israel to Babylonia, he said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Al kol hametim, for all other deceased relatives, ratza korea biyad, ratza korea bikli. If he wants to, he may tear kriya with his hand. If he wants to, he can tear kriya using an instrument like a scissors or a razor. Al aviv al imo, but for his father and his mother, biyad, he must do it by hand. So the truth is that the way we do it nowadays, especially because our clothes are difficult to rip and the hems are really quite hard, is that we generally have a person or the rabbi start with a razor, just make the cut to get through the hem, and then the mourner will grab a hold of it and do the tear the rest of the kriya by hand. Second wide line, this is the 11th distinction, 11th and final. V'amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, al kol ha-meitim kulan mibifnim, for all other deceased relatives we tear inside. Al avi ve'al imo korea mibachutz, but for his father and his mother he tears outside. So this seems to be referring actually to the act of kriya, and there are two different ways to understand it. One is that for other relatives, there was an inner room and they would tear it in private, which is often done at funerals today. But for his father and his mother, he has to do it in front of everyone in public. Or it could mean that other mourners would have an overcoat on, an outer layer, and they would stick their hand underneath and tear the kriya in a way that you couldn't see it. It wasn't visible because it was underneath a layer of clothing. But for his father and his mother, he's supposed to do it in a way that can be seen by the public, which increases the pathos of the act. Amar Rav Chista says, middle of the third wide line, V'chein l'nasi. The same thing is true, in other words, that you have to tear publicly when you tear for the nasi, who was the prince, the top, he was the top ranking Talmid Chacham and official, so he was the number one Jew, he was the Gadol Hador, if you will, of that community. As we saw above, in that when we were discussing Choletz Ketefav, about revealing one shoulder, the question that the Gemara had is that everyone has to reveal their shoulder for the Nasi, that the mourning for the Nasi is very intense, similar to mother and father. So just like for a mother and father, you have to reveal your shoulder, so too for the Nasi. And here we say as well that that just like for a mother and father, you have to tear kriya publicly, so too for an Asi, you have to tear kriya publicly. However, the Gemara has a question about this. Meitvei, lo hushvu la'aviv le'imo ela le'ichui bilvad. In the Mishnah that we're going to come to in a couple dapim, it seems to indicate that these special people, the Nasi, the Av Beitin, one's Rebbe, these kinds of people, were only compared, lo hushvu, they were only equalized to his father and his mother related to ichui. That is that you're never allowed to fully repair the garment. That seems to be the only overlapping thing. So my love, afilu l'nasi, wouldn't this also apply to the nasi, that the only distinction would be that you can never repair the garment, but the idea that you would have to tear in public should not be the same. So the Gemara answers, lo lebar mi nasi. No, all the other positions, that's true. But for the nasi, there is an additional comparison to one's mother and father that you have to tear kriya publicly. And now we have a story, nasi ha-shachiv, that happened once that the nasi passed away. Amar le Rav Chista said, in the parentheses we have to Rav Hanan bar Rava, but that is taken out by the Aruch. He says he has a different girsa, Rav Nachman bar Ami. Anyway, Rav Chista told one of his students, Kape asita, turn over the block, like turn over this little soapbox that you can stand on, v'kumalan, get on top of it, v'achui kriya la'alma, and do the tearing of the kriya so that everyone can see you. In other words, do it publicly. And this was for the nasi, so we see that that was the case. Okay, continuing on, third line from the bottom. Al-Chacham, for a wise man, choletz. Now here we're switching from kriya to chalitza, from tearing one's clothes to revealing one's shoulder. So it's unclear a little whether those are completely two separate actions, that tearing your clothes is one action and revealing your shoulder is another action, or if after one tears one clothes, then they have to take the tear in their clothing and use it to reveal their shoulder. It says, Al chacham choletz miyamin, for a wise man, you reveal the right shoulder. Al av beitin mismol, for the head of the beitin, you reveal the left shoulder. Al nasi, for the nasi, mikan mikan, you do both. So you actually have a hierarchy here of the three top official positions of Jews in Babylonia. We don't have exact analogs to these anymore, but the nasi was the head of the academy, kind of like the dean, or the, kind of like the overall head, and he was also a political figure. The Av Beitin was the one who actually was the Menahel. He actually ran the Beitin, and he perhaps might have been, depending on the exact makeup, might have been a bigger Talmud Chacham than the Nasi, but his role was only a religious and learning role related to the Beitin. But from a Kavod perspective, the Nasi is the number one on the rung, and the Av Beitin is number two. And then one step below is the Chacham, who would be sort of the senior scholar in the Beit Din or in the Beit Midrash, but you know, that title was not as official. The Chacham title was an honorific; it was important, but it was not at the same level as the Nasi or the Av Beit Din. So, therefore, since the Nasi is the top level, you have to bear both shoulders, which it didn't mention in our story above, but it was ambiguous. Perhaps they were planning to bear both shoulders. For the Av Beit Din, just the left one, and for the Chacham, the right one. Tanu Rabbanan. So what happens when these people pass away? How does the community respond? Chacham Shemet, when you have the senior scholar in the Beit Midrash who passes away, Beit Midrasho Batel, his Beit Midrash stops their learning. It's unclear how long this takes place for, if it's just the day of the burial, or until the burial, or if it's longer than that. But in any case, as a response to his death, they stopped their regular shiurim and learning, at least for that day. Av Beit Din Shemet, if the Av Beit Din passes away, kol batei midrashot shebi iro batelin. Since the Beit Din is responsible for the whole city, all the batei midrash in the city stopped their regular learning, even if it was not his main Beit Midrash, because he's responsible for the whole city. And then in addition, v'nichnasim lebeit haknesset, they all would come to the shul. And when they came to the shul, mishanin et mikoman, they would change their places, which is something that mourners do. But this is now everyone. It's not just one mourner that has to change his makom kavua. Everybody has to change their place. So hayoshvim b'tzafon, those who sat on the north, yoshvim b'darom, they would switch to the south. Hayoshvim b'darom, and those who sat in the south, yoshvim b'tzafon, they would sit in the north. So everybody would change their places. Finally, nasi shemet, if the nasi, if the prince, the exilarch, the head of the community, passed away, batei midrashot kulan betelin, all of the batei midrash cease, apparently not just in the city, perhaps it's all the batei midrash in the whole country or all over are supposed to stop. Ubnei haKnesset nichnasin lebeit haKnesset, and the people of the shul go into the shul. V'korin sheva v'yotzin, and they read seven aliyot and they go out. So it's a little unclear what this is referring to. One possibility is that it's a special Torah reading in honor of the death of the Nasi. That's not the main way that the Rishonim read it. Another way to look at it is that They shorten the davening. They only go through the reading of the Torah, and then everybody goes home. A third way to look at it is they don't daven at all in the shul. That they don't daven in the shul at all during at least the day that he died, and maybe the whole Shiva. And they only go to shul in order to do a public Torah reading, but there's no davening at all. Last possibility is it could be this is just referring to Shabbat, that they cancel all the regular minyanim, but on Shabbat at least they gather for the reading of the seven aliyot, which would make sense because it's seven and it has to be referring only to Shabbat. So it makes a big disruption. Not just the learning is disrupted, but all the regular davening is disrupted as well when the Nasi passes away. It makes a big impact on the Jewish people. We'll just do a couple more lines. Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha says, Lo she'yelchu v'yitaylu bashuk. It's not a vacation. It's not that they should go and be mitayel, tour around in the shuk, like, you know, have free time. Eli yoshvim v'domin. Everyone is supposed to be sitting in their house and being quiet as if they were a mourner. In other words, everyone is a mourner. So just like a mourner doesn't come to shul regularly during the Sheva, so too, when the Nasi passes away, everyone stays in their houses and acts like a mourner. The only difference is they don't have anyone who is, I guess, doesn't seem like there's anyone who's mitnachem. Nobody comes to pay Shiva visits. In addition, Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha says, Ve'ein omrim shmua v'agada b'beit ha'avel. And just, you know, you've canceled the regular shiurim and the davening, so you don't just teach shmua and agada, oral teachings and agada, you don't teach them in the house of the avel as well. So there's a lot of discussion about what applies to this and what doesn't. Which things can be taught, which things can't be taught or learned in a base level, but we won't deal with that now. However, Amru alav al Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel, it was said about Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel, Shahaya Omer Shmua v'Agadah b'Vira Avel, that he did in fact, yes, say oral teachings in Agadah and the Beit HaAvel. The reason for this seems to be limiting this case to Shabbat. It seems that what we're talking about is on Shabbat, whether or not you can teach Shmua Nagada, and that according to Rabbi Hanan ben Gamliel, he felt, according to the opinion, that there was no mourning on Shabbat at all, and therefore it was permitted to teach Shmua Nagada, whereas others would say, even though there's no public mourning on Shabbat, it is still one of the days of Shiva, and so therefore you should not actually teach in the Beit HaAvel. One interesting other point just to make here, which is, and this will be cited a little bit later, a couple dapim later, is there is a big distinction between the things that you do as an avel, all of the things that you do as an avel, all the mourning activities, both the things that you specifically do and the things that you're prohibited from doing, and tearing kriya, even though they got mixed up in here. The rules for keeping avelut and the rules for tearing kriya don't always match up one-to-one. We say avelut lachud v'kriya lachud. They are separate ideas. So for instance, one outgrowth of that, and the reason it's brought up in the Gemara later, is because we know that we have an opinion that we always go according halacha, we follow Shmuel's dictum, halacha k'divrei hamekil, that we go according to the lenient opinion in the laws of avelut. This may not apply to the laws of kriya, because they are a separate entity. We'll stop there, five lines down on the top of Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph, and we will pick up in our next recording. Have a wonderful day.